Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Text number 49. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Tame tam Shri Veda Vyasa Sya Samadhi Jat Anubhavam Shri Shonaka Prashnotaratnoena Vishadayan Vishadayan Sarvatma Ram Anubhavena Sahetukam Samvadayati Atma Ramascha Nirgunta vidinisheda atita nirgata hankara gruntayo va. Ahoitukim palabi sandi rahitam atra sarvakshepa parihar artam aha itam bhuta atmarama namapi akarshana swabhavo guno yasyasa iti. Further clarifying these in-trance realizations of Sri Vedavyas, the verse Atma Ramascha is spoken as the answer to a question by Sri Shonaka. This verse upholds Vyasadeva's realization by citing the experience of all kinds of self-satisfied persons, Atma Ramas, and by giving a logical reason. Those who are free from restrictions, nirgranta, are either beyond Vedic injunctions and prohibitions, or free from the knots of false ego. The word causeless, ahoituki, means without looking for profit. To remove any doubt about the claims made about the Atma Ramas, the words, such are his qualities, ittam bhuta gunaha, are spoken. His qualities are such that they naturally attract even the self-satisfied. Okay. So we had, in the beginning of the seventh chapter, the first canto, description of Vyasadeva's meditation. Then it's stated that having compiled and then organized or rearranged or expanded the Bhagavatam, Anukramya, he taught it to his son, Shukadev. The question is asked, but he's self-satisfied, impersonalist. Why is he interested? Why was he interested in hearing the Bhagavatam? Specific question, but the answer is general. This is what we call a poetic device, Alankar, called Art Antaranyas. You apparently change the topic actually in order to clarify something that needs to be clarified or answer a question or a doubt. And the typical ways of Artantaranyasa are to use something specific to explain a general idea or vice versa, to use a general to explain a specific. Here, the specific question was asked, but the answer is given in general terms. About Atmaramas in general, sages who are self-satisfied, Atmaramas to Munayo. And the Jiva Goswami gives a little bit of explanation. Of course, many things can be said about this verse. Lord Chaitanya gave 64 interpretations more than once. But Jiva Goswami is just in two sentences here, or three sentences, a few sentences, is giving a brief explanation of the verse. What Atmaram, what Nirgunta means, what Ahoituki means, and the significance of saying at the end, such are the qualities of Lord Hari. Commentary. Seekers of truth disagree among one another only until they acquire a taste for hearing about and discussing the all-attractive qualities of Lord Hari. Scholars who dispute the nature of the absolute truth do so because they are not self-satisfied. If you're peaceful and satisfied, you don't have any need to argue with anybody, especially over philosophy. Philosophy won't fill your belly. You can argue over food, over women, but why bother to argue over philosophy? It doesn't do anything for you anyway. But the tendency is there among those who are not satisfied to argue over philosophy and everything else, just because they're not satisfied. Anyway, let me continue the commentary. Dissatisfied and confused, they can hardly enlighten anyone else. These are the scholars who dispute the nature of the absolute. As long as adherents of various religions are ready to condemn and even kill one another, they have not obviously not yet attained the stage of self-satisfaction. Real scholarship and devotion belong to those who know the science of Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, which was taught by Srila Vyasadeva in the Vedanta Sutras for the benefit of serious philosophers, and in Srimad Bhagavatam for the benefit of all humanity. Atma Ramas Jamunayo Nirgranta Apyuru Krume Kurvan Yohoi Tukim Bhaktim Itambhuta Guno Harihi Hare Gunak Shipta Matir Bhagavan Bhadarayanihi Adyagan Mahadakyanam Nityam Vishnujana Priyaha. All different varieties of Atmaramas, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service under the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. Srila Shukadeva Goswami, the son of Srila Vyasadeva, was not only transcendentally powerful, he was also very dear to the devotees of the Lord. Thus, his mind captivated by the enchanting qualities of Lord Hari, he underwent the study of this great narration. Here, self-satisfied sages are characterized as nirgranta, which means free from false ego. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana points out that such sages retain a sense of personal identity, but they transcend attachment to material ego, which is a product of Mahat-tattva, the energized state of primeval nature. When jivas are covered by the material element ahankara, they wrongly identify themselves with the bodies they temporarily inhabit in this world. This distinction will be further explained in the second sandarbha. I could say where. I'm going to add a note. I should add an indication of where. Oh, boy. Krishna, Krishna. Okay, there's more to this other chain. I'll continue. 49.2. Tamevartam Shishuka Syapyanubhavena Samvadyati Hariya Guneti. Sri Vedavyasa Devad Yat Kinshit Shrutena Hariya Gunena Purvam Akshiptamatir Brahmanandanu Bhavo Yasya Saha Paschad Adyagan Mahad Vistirnamiti. This idea is also upheld by Sri Shukadeva's own experience, described in the verse beginning Hari Arjuna. First, Shukadeva's attitude, mati, his perception of bliss in the impersonal supreme, was changed by the little he heard directly from Sri Vedavyasa about the qualities of Lord Hari. Then he studied the entire work. Then he studied the entire extensive work. Okay, there's more to the Sanskrit. I'll read. Tatascha tatsankata sauhardena nityam vishnu jana priya yasya tata bhuto va te sham priyo va swayam abhavat iti artaha ayam bhavo brahma vart Bhamavaivard Tahanusarena Purvam Tavad Ayam Garbhavasamarabhya Shri Krishnasya Swairitariya Maya Nivarakatvam Gyatavan. As a result of Sukadeva's reading the whole Bhagavatam, the devotees of Lord Vishnu became perpetually dear to him. Or alternatively, he became dear to them. Because of the friendly relationships they developed while discussing together topics of the Lord. Implicit in this description are these events recounted in the Brahmavaivarta Purana. Even while Shukadev was residing in his mother's womb, he became aware that Lord Sri Krishna, whenever he desires, can dispel material illusion. Shukadev then impelled Srila Vyasadev to bring Krishna there so that having a vision of the Lord within the womb would remove, for Shukadev, all danger of illusion. Tatra Shri Tataksva Niyojanaya Shri Vyasadev Ananitasya Tasyantar Darshanat Tannivarane Sati Kritartam Manyataya Swayam Ekantam Evagatavan. Tatra Shri Veda Vyasas Tutam Vashikartum Tad Ananyasadhanam Shri Bhagavatam Eva Gyatva Tad Gunati Shaya Prakashamayams Tadiya Padya Visheshan Katanchit Shravayitva Tena Tam Akshiptamatim Kritva Tameva Purnam Tam Adyabayamasa Eti Bhagavata Mahima Dishayat Protaha. Shukadev, okay, I'll repeat the one sentence. Shukadev then impelled Srila Vyasadev to bring Krishna there so that having a vision of the Lord within the womb would remove for Shukadev all danger of illusion. This accomplished, Shukadev considered his life successful and at once left home, going off alone. Thinking of how to influence Shukadev, Sri Vedavyasa decided that only Srimad Bhagavatam could effectively do this. He had someone recite certain verses from the Bhagavatam, revealing Lord Krishna's transcendental qualities, in a place where Shukadev would hear them. This created a change in the mind of Shukadev, who then studied the entire work. This history shows the super excellence of Srimad Bhagavatam. Commentary. Being born perfectly self-realized, Shukadev Goswami couldn't by no means be enticed to stay home long enough to study with his father, Srila Vyasadev. Vyasa could attract him to come out of the womb only by having some disciples chant a few verses from the Bhagavatam so that Shukadev could hear. According to Baladeva Vidyabhushan, the verses chanted by Vyasa's students told about Krishna's elevating the witch Putana to the position of his eternal nurse and his becoming the servant of the Pandavas as their charioteer. Really? I thought this is when he ran away. Okay, let me check. Okay, I will check Baladeva Vidyabhushan whether he says it. Okay. It's marked as questionable. Maybe it got mixed up in the editing. I'll take a look at it. Contrary accounts about Shukadev in the Mahabharata and some of the other Puranas say that he was not born from the womb of Vyasadeva's wife and that he later married. Such accounts describe another person with the same name who lived during a different day of Lord Brahma. Okay. Anyway, maybe this also happened. I'm not sure whether I got this, whether this is mixed up or whether Baladeva Vidyabhushan actually says that. that Vyasadev had some disciples chant because he brought Krishna and Krishna talked to Shukadev in the womb. So I'll check. I'll check what Baladev says. There's one more part, 49.3. Tadevam darshitam vaktup shri shukasya shri veda vyasasya cha samana vidayam tasmad vaktur vidayanurupam eva sarvatra tatpartyam paryalochaniyam nanyata yat yad tadanyata paryalochanam tatra tatra kupatagami taiveti nishtonkitam shri shukaha. That formula at the end, shri shukaha, at the end of an anuchet, he typically says, this was spoken by somebody to somebody else. He just gives the two names, one in nominative and the other in accusative. This one is just sutta, no accusative here, just the subject. Sutta spoke this. That is his way of wrapping up, marking the end of an anuchet. The anuchet is based on one particular verse or a few verses in the Bhagavatam, so that verse is alluded to by mentioning who was the speaker of it, to whom. In this way, it is shown that the speaker of the Bhagavatam, Sri Shuka, shared the same attitude as Sri Vedavyas. Therefore, in all cases, we should analyze the purport of the Bhagavatam strictly in accordance with the attitude of its speaker, not otherwise. We must conclude that any analysis that disagrees with Shukadev's ideas will only create a perverted understanding. The verses under discussion, that's Bhagavatam 1.7, verses 10 and 11, were spoken by Sri Suta Goswami. Okay, any discussion on that? Yes.
I don't understand this point. The Mahabharata and some other Puranas say that he was not born from the womb of Vyasa's wife and that he later married.
Yes. That's what some... that version is there in the Devi Bhagavat and maybe some other Purana too. But it's not about the same person. It's about some other Shukadev. Is that okay?
I heard, Shukdev expands his other form and this form went to his house.
This is part of the story from the Devi Bhagavat. In the Devi Bhagavat we have two Shukadevs. But I'm saying that okay, there's a second Shukadev in that story from the Devi Bhagavat, an expansion of the first one. In the first case, that Shukadev who expanded into another Shukadev, he's not the same Shukadev as the one who spoke the Bhagavatam anyway. So we got three Shukadevs. Different ones. And then he had another brother called Hari in the Devi Bhagavat.
I've heard many people.
There's two ways to get to speak. You can raise your hand or you can grab the microphone first. Go ahead.
I heard many people saying about this parrot becoming Shukadev, and I don't know exactly where it comes from, but
another
I've
Purana.
Heard from.
Again, another Purana. I think that's also Devi Bhagavat. But that's nice. It may be true in our case, but the problem is the other things that Devi Bhagavat say about the Shukadev can't be the same Shukadev. So maybe that's also true in the case of our Shukadev, but the one who's talked about in the Devi Bhagavat is a different person. So we have to be careful when we take information about people that we know from the Bhagavatam, when we take information from other Puranas, it might not actually be the same person. Then all this about Shukadev would be a little. We have to do some research to sort it out exactly. Okay, but Dermot Apu was waiting first. Yes,
a very short question on that same point. Does Baladeva Vibhushana mention this, that thing, that what you say, that this must be another Shukadev? I understand this is logical, and I really, how to say it.
Okay, let me check. Okay, you're questioning it, whether I'm just speculating. Okay.
No. Oh, yeah.
I withdraw my question.
No, I'm going to mark it. I'm going to check. Okay, I'm gonna check whether he does. Does? I think he does, but I'll check.
Okay. Oh, he's helping to save me from getting into trouble. Udhavapu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I want to ask, what is the name of Shukadev's mother, Vasudev's wife?
I don't think we know. Vyasadeva, I know Vyasadeva's mother, but his wife's name I don't think is given. Very often, important devotees and sages and even avatars, sometimes they're not given the name of the wife. You know, the wives are in the background, and sometimes they're not, even their names aren't told. So I don't know. Does anybody know the name of Vyasadeva's wife? Yeah. But remember, Puranic Encyclopedia tells some all different Puranas.
Yeah, but they mention from which Purana comes, so that's information.
Yeah, a lot of his information comes from the Devi Bhagavat. Okay, we can look it up. I could look now, but it will slow us down. Yes.
Just a question about, well, it's just a general question. I don't know. About the Devi Bhagavat, what is its status for devotees? I mean, it seems that many times it is disregarded, and so what is the criteria used to select what is correct?
I don't think the Vaishnavas are saying that it's bogus, because sometimes they refer to it, and they don't say this is a bogus, you know. Not a real Purana, but it's, we don't accept it as one of the 18 major Puranas. There's one slot for a Bhagavatam, and it's either our Bhagavatam or theirs. It can't be both. So we accept the Devi Bhagavat as an Upa Purana, as a secondary Purana, which means we accept it as authentic, but we have to understand what it says in the proper context, that it's describing things in some other day of Brahma. And the Shukadev in there, in that book, is not the same Shukadev as the one we know. But we accept it. We accept it as scripture, as a bona fide secondary Purana. Secondary Puranas are also authoritative, but they're not as important as the 18 major Puranas. Yes, Vishnu Kantabhu.
The last paragraph says, in all cases we should analyze the purport of Bhagavatam strictly in accordance with the attitude of the speaker, not otherwise.
Yes.
So that means that there are some explanations given which are not in accordance with Shukadev's.
Yeah, the Mayavadis also give their interpretation of Bhagavatam. There are some Mayavadi commentaries on Bhagavatam. And they're going to say, push the Mayavadi line, which Shukadev doesn't agree in. Shukadev at least he became a pure Vaishnava. So he's not going to, there are those who are teaching that Bhagavatam, the Prayojana taught in the Bhagavatam is impersonal realization. That's contrary to Shukadev's experience. He had his impersonal realization. He gave it up to study the Bhagavatam and associate with the devotees of Krishna. And speak the Bhagavatam to Pariksit.
Also, he says in the very next line, the analysis that disagrees with Shukadeva's ideas will only create a perverted understanding.
Yes, so, like the Mayavadis trying to give a commentary on Bhagavatam.
So, actually, what I understand from few classes we had on the Tika of 1.3.28 verse, so there you explained that Shukadeva's actual understanding was that Krishna is Bhagavan, Swayam Krishna is the actual Bhagavan. So many people, even the other Vaishnava Sampradayas, they disagree with this particular point.
Yeah,
so, it, so does it mean that they are also perverted understanding?
Yeah, if you, it's a perversion of a kind. It's a much lesser degree. It's one thing to say that we're all God. It's another thing to say that Narayan's the original God and Krishna is just an avatar. Yes, it's perverted from our point of view. It's wrong from our point of view, but we tolerate it. We consider that they are also Vaishnavas. They're just Vaikuntha Vaishnavas. And the devotees in Vaikuntha tend to think Narayan is the ultimate. And it is wrong, but it's not lethally wrong. It doesn't spoil their devotion. But it's not in the mood of our devotion. So there's different degrees of perverted understanding.
I remember Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary on Bhagavad Gita, this word Maya Aparta Jnana. There he interprets the word Maya Aparta Jnana as these people who don't accept Krishna as the ultimate, but Narayana as ultimate, like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. It's Vishwanath Chakravarti's opinion.
And he concludes that, might be very radical, but he says they cannot even go to Vaikuntha, something like that.
Okay.
But
I'm sure he spoke that in Bengal, not in Chennai. Yeah. He was addressing a certain audience, an audience of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. But if he was preaching to the three Vaishnavas, he wouldn't talk like that.
That's applicable for all, isn't it? I mean, he wrote for all of them, not only for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas.
Okay, anyway, it's his opinion. He has a right to his opinion. Strong opinion, but, you know. Yes. Pardon.
So this question of Devi Bhagavat came up. I don't know if it would be useful for us to see their arguments also. I saw their arguments and they are not as strong as the
arguments. What are they arguing for?
From the Devi Bhagavat side.
Yeah. What are they trying to prove?
They're trying to prove that Devi Bhagavatam is the actual Bhagavatam.
Oh, the argument is that the Devi Bhagavat is the actual Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
In his, what is the book? Premaya Ratnavali, another book, short book by Baladev Vidyabhushan. No, not that book. It may be Premaya Ratnavali. Baladev Vidyabhushan gives the argument that Devi Bhagavat is not the real Bhagavat, not the Mahabhagavat. I haven't seen the arguments from the Devi Bhagavat side.
They tend to attack all these things, but it's not such a strong case at all. Like they don't have anything substantial to say, really. I don't know if it
really
would be of any use to.
Yes. And there's a few other things. There's, you know, according to other Puranas, there's supposed to be a description of the killing of Vritrasura and some other things. And Devi Bhagavan does have that. It is spoken by Shukadev, but the wrong Shukadev. Actually, I think it's in the Sarvasamvadini. I don't know if it's here or in the Bhagavad Sandarbha. Maybe we have a, do we have Sarvasamvadini for this anuchet? Okay, well, somewhere in Sarvasamvadini, maybe in Bhagavad Purana, there's some discussion of this controversy by Jiva Goswami. Yes. We did. Okay. It's there. So Jiva Goswami gives his argument there. And he you know, gives the Purva Paksha also to some extent. All right. Anything else? Yes. Prahlad Nadapu.
Here in Sukadev impelled Sri Vyasadev to bring Krishna. Actually, I mean, in the womb he had the knowledge that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then how I cannot understand that he has the attachment towards impersonal Brahma?
That was after he heard the Bhagavatam.
that he developed that understanding. How was it that he was attached to impersonal conception?
Yeah, how he had attachment towards when, actually when, his time and how.
Well, before he heard the Bhagavatam, that's what changed him. Hariyar Gunakshita Matir. His mentality was changed by hearing the Bhagavatam, by studying the Bhagavatam. Before that, he was an impersonalist. Now, you can say, well, isn't he an eternal associate? Yes, this is a pastime. Many of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, some of them, seemed to be impersonalists, but they're actually eternal associates of Lord Chaitanya. It's a leela.
But he had knowledge that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he impaled
when?
When he was in his womb, here in the translation, we are finding that Sukadev then impelled Sri Vyasadeva to bring Krishna there, so that having a vision of the Lord within the womb, we are removed.
I see.
For Sukadev, all danger of illusion.
Okay, well, maybe that's explained by what's said in the commentary, that he heard Bhagavatam recited by Vyasadeva's disciples in the womb. So, if that's correct, it probably is correct then, what the commentary says, that Vyasadeva arranged for the disciples to speak some Bhagavatam while Shukadev was in the womb, and hearing that changed his mind. I'll check it. I have to check Baladev's commentary, make sure I have it right. But that would explain how he became Krishna conscious, you know, and then asked for Krishna, you know. Actually, wait, let me see this. See, Shukadev impelled Vyasadeva to bring there. I don't think by saying, please bring Krishna here. He just wasn't coming out. And Vyasadeva could only think of, you know, who's going to help us? So he impelled him indirectly, not by saying anything, not by asking specifically, please bring Krishna. But because Vyasadeva couldn't figure out any other solution to get his son out of the womb, therefore he came to the conclusion, let me go get Krishna. That's how he impelled him, not by asking for it. But it says here, I'm sorry, even in the womb he became aware that Krishna can dispel the material illusion. That's there. Yeah. So I think in the commentary, this is Baladev Vijayabhushan explaining how it happened, that he heard Bhagavatam while in the womb. That's how he became aware that Krishna can dispel the material illusion. I think that's it, but I'll verify. I'll check Baladev again.
Thank you.
Okay. Vishnukanta and then Damodar Gopal.
I also heard that when he was born, immediately he just ran away from the house. And
then again.
So twice it happened, you're saying?
That's why it struck me as funny, because this happened after, when he was running away. But maybe a similar thing happened both of these times.
This Putana, that verse was chanted when he was in the forest and the disciples went there and they chanted this... Kimva Dayalam Sharanam Rajayama, that verse. So they must have chanted some other verse when he was inside the womb itself.
Yeah, well, that I'll see whether Baladev says that sentence. I may have gotten it mixed up and brought this information from the other episode. I'll check it and sort it out. Anyway, before Shukadev can speak the Bhagavatam, he has to hear it. He doesn't have much time. So, because he was 16 years old when he spoke the Bhagavatam. He was 16 years old when he came out of the womb. That means it was only, at most, a couple of months from the time he came out of the womb to the time he sat down and spoke Bhagavatam to Parikshit. So when is he going to hear the Bhagavatam? So he could have start hearing it in the womb and heard it, you know, while he was running away, and then came home and studied for a while with Vyasadeva. So, makes sense. He should have started hearing in the womb, because he only has a few months to study the Bhagavatam. Sorry, Damodar Gopal had to say.
The discussion about the Devi Bhagavat. So it's here in Anuchet 20.
In the Anuchet, in the commentary?
Yeah, in the commentary.
Okay. And you want to tell us something about
that? So it quotes some verses from the... Skanda Purana and also the Matsya Purana. Yeah. So it says that there's two Devi Puranas, Devi Bhagavats, but there's only one that has the features similar to that of the Bhagavatam, which is 5 in number. One, it has 18,000 verses. Two,
I think this is the argument that Baladev Vidyabhushan gives in his book, Pramaya Vanavali, and this is Baladev's commentary on the Tava Sandarbha. So this is Baladev speaking.
It has 18,000 verses organized into 12 cantos. It begins with the form of the Gayatri Mantra. A few episodes, this is number 4, a few episodes in the life of Prahlad are described in its 4th canto, although we're revealing much of its true Sankhya character. So there's some verses.
That's the Devi Bhagavat.
Yeah. And also 5th, in its 6th canto, tells about Vritasura.
Yes. So Prahlad, Vritasura, Gayatri in the beginning.
Yeah.
18,000 verses and 12 cantos. Devi Bhagavat's got all of that.
Yeah, but there's other verses that mention things about the Bhagavatam which the Devi Bhagavatam doesn't have.
And there are?
One is, it discusses events that occurred in the Sarasvata Kalpa,
okay,
also known as Vita Varaha Kalpa.
And the fact that the Devi Bhagavat is talking about a different day of Brahma, that explains how the Shukadev can be completely different, because it's a different Shukadev in that other kalpa.
It describes the Brahma Vidya Tad by Ayagriva. The Brahma Vidya.
Oh, okay, the instruction, the mantra that Diji gave to the Ashwini Kumaris.
Yeah. Okay. And Chui, it was spoken by Sukadev.
Oh, I see. So the Devi Bhagavat talks about Shukadev, but it's not spoken by Shukadev.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And 4, it is a narration of Vaishnav character that one should recite in front of the deity of Lord Vishnu.
Yeah, other Puranas talk about the Bhagavatam that's spoken by Shuka. Not the other Bhagavatam or any other Bhagavatam, the one spoken by Shuka. That's the words of some other Purana. So it should, the real Bhagavatam, the major one, should be spoken by Shukadev. And what's the 5th thing? Okay. Oh, 4 special features of our Bhagavatam.
Yeah, there's 5 things that are
similar. 5 things that are similar and 4 special features that...
Okay, so it's in the early 18th century AD that Baladev Vidyabhushan came up with this argument.
Also, you were discussing... I didn't read the whole thing, but from what you're discussing, it says you're... that Vyasadev, he recited some verses to attract Sukadev back, and then this created a change in the mind of Sukadev, who then studied the entire work. So it says that after hearing a few verses, that's when he studied the entire work. Like it says in the purport, Purnam Tam.
What about his running away from home?
Excuse me?
What about his running away from home and the same thing happening after he left the womb?
Yeah, no, so what it says is...
Okay, well, it looks like...
That's what it says, is after he left the womb... He went out in order to influence Sukadev, Vyasadev's...
Oh, that's what you're reading there.
Yeah. Sent a few verses, and then he was attracted, then decided to study the whole thing.
Okay.
It says in the Sanskrit, Purnam Tam Adhyapayan.
Yes. Okay, I still have to check with Baladev what's going on in 49. Sarvika Prabhu?
How to understand that the Shukadev from Devi Bhagavatam is different one, because I don't know what is written in Devi Bhagavatam, but is there any description about Krishna? We know that Krishna, he comes not in every day of Brahmana, on a special occasion. So yeah. If Krishna's description is there and Shukadeva is there, so...
Description of Krishna in Devi Bhagavat?
Krishna's appearance, his pastimes, and Shukadeva, if they are simultaneously present, so it's so many...
Krishna
so many,
appears once in the day of Brahma.
Yeah.
So he can appear, appears in other kalpas also. So Devi Bhagavat can be describing Krishna's appearance in a different kalpa, no?
But how to understand a different kalpa?
Different day of Brahma.
Different day of Brahma.
That's what a kalpa is. So that's okay. Krishna can appears in each kalpa once.
So it can be...
Yeah, but it's a past or future appearance of Krishna, not the one that we read about in the Bhagavatam.
Uh-huh.
which may be very similar, but it doesn't have to be exactly the same, what happened.
Mm-hmm. And also in this 49.2 commentary, this about Vyasa could attract him to come out of the womb only by having some disciples chant a few verses from Bhagavatam, so that she could have a good hand. And then this sentence, according to Baldevi Depushin, the verses chanted by Vyasa's students told about Krishna's elevating the Vishputana. So it seems that it's a description about how he attracted him to come from out of forest, not out of womb.
Seems like that, yes. Yeah, yeah. Yes, it
does. According to the context. It must be distance, no, not to come out of the womb. So,
okay. Anyway, I may have added that myself erroneously in the wrong place, and I'll go look and see what Baladeva Vibhushan actually said and what he didn't say and what I made up, and we'll sort it out.
And also have a question. It's a change of topic. Is it okay?
Yes, yes.
So it's from the very first commentary about this, just as long as adherents of various religions are ready to condemn and even kill one another, they have obviously not yet attained the stage of self-realization, self-satisfaction. So we can judge that sometimes Vaishnava Acharyas, they also speak very strongly against all different deviations, different avasampradayas or different religions, materialistic religions.
Yeah, we usually don't see them recommending, let's have a, let's go kill all the Sharvites, or not our Vaishnavas. Now, they're not proposing to eliminate the enemy, just don't listen to their philosophy.
Yeah. At least we can see that Vaishnavas, they are preaching so strongly, so somebody may argue that they are also not self-satisfied because they are preaching, because they're condemning.
Yeah, it takes a little subtle intelligence to see the difference when you're criticizing out of compassion to save somebody. It's not just, there's no enmity involved, and it's really to do somebody good. You know, it's the difference between, a thief in the street attacking me with a knife and a doctor, in the hospital giving me, doing surgery on me. It's the difference. They're both cutting me open with a knife, but there's a difference. And you have to, have the subtlety of intelligence to see the difference. People will criticize, but because they can't discriminate. Yes, whatever.
What is the difference between Brahmavadi and Mayavadi, Prabhu?
Okay. This is a general question, but we're pretty much done with the class anyway. So normally I would ask, keep it to the topic, but now we're at the end. I think Prabhupada explains that Brahmavadis are not envious of Krishna. They just weren't informed about the supremacy of God, or they're just... spiritual intelligence is not mature enough to properly understand what it means that Krishna is the supreme. Not just Saguna Brahma, but the real thing. So it's not out of envy, but just out of naivety, out of immature understanding that the Brahmavadis are impersonalist. But the Mayavadis are actually envious of God. They want to usurp the position of God. That's the difference. And a Brahmavadi can be transformed by good association. A Mayavadi, a real hardcore Mayavadi, is much harder to change.
Shukadeva Goswami is Brahmavadi.
Brahmavadi, yeah, because he wasn't envious. He immediately responded to the Bhagavatam. A Mayavadi will listen to the Bhagavatam and then just not change. He'll reinterpret it in his own Mayavadi way. Then he'll accept Krishna and the worship of Krishna as some secondary thing, and Krishna is actually an illusion, but it's good for people to worship him. And so, out of kindness to the people in general, the Mayavadi will promote the worship of Krishna, even though he knows that Krishna is just an illusion. So with that envious attitude, they can't be changed, and they can't do any good for anybody else. But an innocent Brahmavadi can be changed by association of Vaishnavas and by hearing the Bhagavatam.
And then how Mayavadis wrote the commentary on Bhagavatam? In
because
Bhagavatam, everywhere there is explained about Krishna.
Right, but they, Krishna's fine for them. They don't mind talking about Krishna and thinking about Krishna, as long as you understand that Krishna is not this actually absolute truth. He's just an illusion. Krishna is the highest illusion. Narayano paro vyaktat. Narayana is beyond the material nature. But because he's a person, he's an illusion. But, you know, for the common people, all they can do is think about illusions. Their intelligence doesn't go beyond illusion. So let the people in general worship Krishna. That's great. The Mahavadis therefore promote it. They'll present themselves as Vaishnavas and they'll even write commentaries on the Bhagavatam. But actually they hate Krishna. They're aparadis. They're enemies of Krishna. Just like, you know, Karna and Duryodhan, they were Vaishnavas, you know, externally. They worshipped Vishnu. But they're actually enemies of Krishna and his devotees.
Karna and
Sen. Oh, Karna was, you know, Karna was an enemy of the Pandavas, and that got him in trouble with Krishna. And Shishupal and Jarasandha and, you know, these others, they probably externally were Vaishnavas, but they actually, you know, envied the Lord. The Mayavadis are worse than that, though. They're much more vicious enemies than even these demons. Okay, Ram has the microphone and he had his hand up, so he's first. No, you. Yeah.
It's also a general question. I don't know if...
Okay, we're open for general questions. The class is over, and we have 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to ask about the day of Brahma and the different modes that are... You also mentioned it last class in relation to... Well, just generally the pastimes of the Lord in different days of Brahma and how it is... I mean, the days of Brahma are connected with certain modes. So I wanted to ask, two things in this regard. What does it mean that the day is connected to a mode? Does it mean that there's like a tamasic satya yuga or something like that? This is one thing. And the other is, how do these... I guess it's also to how does Krishna take pleasure in that? And how do these Puranas that are related to the modes... uplift people, because it seems, even with the Devi Bhagavatam, it seems to create this kind of attachment that seems even...
The attachment is already there. Mm-hmm. People in the mode of ignorance are already inclined to want to worship Lord Shiva. He appeals to their tamasic mentality. So, better to encourage, or one way of thinking is that it's good to encourage these people to worship Lord Shiva. He will direct them in the right direction. Better, you know, good idea for tamasic people to worship Shiva. It's better than worshiping nobody. And Shiva is a great Vaishnava, so let them worship the great Vaishnava and let him take care of them. Do not fit in their tamasic condition to properly practice the Vaishnava Dharma. That's the situation before Kali Yuga. Yeah. In Kali Yuga, better, you know, it's everything or nothing in Kali Yuga. That means, you know, those who... It's the only dharma is presented by the Gita and Bhagavatam in Kali Yuga. Other ages, there's, you know, lesser forms of dharma, including worship of various demigods. And it was valid then, but not now. Understand about the cycles of the prominence of the different modes. There's major cycles and minor cycles. Just like we're living in Kali Yuga, which is a tamasic time. But we still have cycles of, you know, some prominence of goodness, then passion, then ignorance. Just like every day, the mode of goodness is more prominent in the morning, passion in the afternoon, and ignorance at night. That happens every day. The whole day may be in a particular mode, but there's a cycle going on during the day. And then people in their own, even within that, individual people in their own minds are moving from one mode to the other in their mentality. It may be a sattvic time in the day, but I may be sleeping through the whole morning, then I'm in the mode of ignorance for a shorter period of time. So there's cycles within cycles. So yes, you can have a whole day of Brahma that's basically in ignorance, and you still have Satyuga, which is relatively in goodness. It's a small cycle within a big cycle. And does that please Krishna? Well, it's part of the material arrangement. That's how the material world is arranged, by time, and time works through these cycles. So it's Krishna's pleasure that the time energy keeps the material cosmos under control. That without the effect of time, the laws of karma cannot work. Law of karma must work through the motion of time. Time is the determining factor. Karma happens at a certain time. Reactions come at a certain time. Time causes the maturing and fructification of karmic reactions. And that's how time works, through these cycles, according to the three modes. So that is Krishna's pleasure, that arrangement is made for a systematic organization of the material existence. Otherwise, if it was all chaos, how could anybody be rectified or learn anything? If we were just cast into meaningless chaos, disorganized chaos. So things are organized and they're arranged so to teach us lessons. So that's Krishna's pleasure. Yes.
I was thinking also about the Mahabharata, which is a scripture that we do accept as primary, in one sense.
Yes.
And there is a story of Maharaj.
It's primary unless it seems to disagree with the Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
And then we take the Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
Unless we can reconcile. But if we can't figure out a reconciliation, we just follow the Bhagavatam.
I'm thinking of the narration of Maharaj Parikshit there.
In the Mahabharata.
Yeah, and I don't know what purpose does it, because we say that it is from another day of Brahma or another time.
And
it seems that the rest of the Mahabharata is from, the main narrative of the Mahabharata is from this day of Brahma, and then it's not so clear what purpose does it serve to have it there, to have the story there, because...
I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. And even that statement that's coming from that Parikshit was in a different day of Brahma, that's my idea. I don't know if that's coming from anybody else.
I heard it, also from another devotee in ISKCON, but I understand that it is.
Okay. I don't remember reading it in any commentary. And then you've got questions about what about the rest of the Mahabharata. I don't know. I haven't figured that out. Yes?
Also about Mahabharata, you've mentioned that we have different version of Mahabharata by Janmini. So what about this Shukadeva, this Parikshit in Janmini's version?
I don't think the original of Janmini's version is available. Somebody told me Chinti Chaitanya said he studied Janmini Bharati in school. So they have some Kannada version, but I don't know if that's actually the real book. So we don't have the book, so we don't know what it says.
Mm-hmm. And about our version of Mahabharata, which describes Parikshit, different from our Parikshit. So is this authentic version of Mahabharata? Because I've heard that we don't have fully confirmed version of Mahabharata.
Problem with Mahabharata is that even though Vyasadeva had it written down by Ganesh, the tradition was evolved that Mahabharata was especially meant to be recited by bards, by reciters, and they recite it from their memory. It's a big book, and apparently at the beginning of Kali Yuga, the bards were trying to all recite it from memory. It looks like they didn't do such a good job of remembering it exactly. Because every single manuscript of the Mahabharata, and there's plenty of them, every one of them is different. There's many versions of the Mahabharata that are in manuscripts. Because they were trying to recite it by heart and probably avoided writing it down because of, you know. And therefore, when they finally got to writing it down, it was all mixed up and nobody could remember which is exactly the original text.
So
the problem in the Kali Yuga of how the Mahabharata was transmitted. Do you have more information on that? Okay.
So can it be, could it be in this case that maybe this version which we have is already corrupted and
well,
this,
we can look at the, you know, a critical edition was done. Critical edition of Mahabharata was made back in 1930s. We have that. It gives, you know, compared a number of manuscripts, a decent number of manuscripts, and noted those things, stories, and parts that only showed up in a few of the manuscripts. They put in the appendix. They didn't consider it those parts authentic. So we can look in the critical edition and see whether this description of Parikshit hiding in the, you know, in the castle, whether that. Whether the critical edition questions the authenticity of it.
Yeah, we might have a really good edition which describes our Parikshit, who didn't hide up and who just went to the bank of the Ganges.
Well, we can look for a Mahabharata that tells what we wanted to tell.
but you see, it would have been changed, so, and therefore we cannot be really sure that this story is
okay,
is
but because there's so many different versions of the Mahabharata, if something in it shows up in all the versions, then it's probably original. Because there's so many variations. If there's no variation on a certain point, then it must be authentic. It probably is authentic. You know, if this story about Parikshit hiding is there in every single manuscript, then we can't really argue that it was somebody stuck it in later.
Also, I've heard that there is one version proved by Madhavacharya, and I don't know if he describes about Parikshit.
Do you know something about
his
that?
Version.
What does Madhva say about it? When? In the 12th?
12th century when he was writing this, when Madhva was there.
Yes.
He says that a lot of things have been changed and none of the editions are authentic. He himself, when he was putting it, he was writing from some 6 or 7 editions of Mahabharata together. He was comparing and then he was writing.
Is he specifically referring to the description of Parikshit acting out of character?
I don't know about that.
Oh. But he says that a lot of Mahabharata was changed. That's the opinion of Madhva. Things were changed.
Actually, he writes it very extremely. He says even kotyamshasha, he says even 1 crore of it is not proper. Something like that, he says.
A whole quarter of it is wrong.
1 crore of it is also...
One.
But that maybe he's referring to all the scriptures together. That we don't even find 1 crore of the scriptures here.
Oh. Okay, so... Yeah, Madhvacharya thinks that it's been changed. We're running out of time. Yeah.
It's about Vyasadeva speaking the Bhagavatam in the womb of... while Sukadeva is in the womb.
Yes.
This is what Prabhupada says in this verse of Areguna Kshipta Matir. This verse under discussion. According to the Brahma Veda Purana, Srila Sukadeva Goswami was a liberated soul even within the womb of his mother. Srila Vyasadeva knew that the child after his birth would not stay at home. Therefore, he, Vyasadeva, impressed upon him the synopsis of the Bhagavatam so the child could be made attached to the transcendental activities of the Lord. After his birth, the child was still more educated in the subject of Bhagavatam by recitation of the actual poems.
So it says that he heard Bhagavatam in the womb from his father.
Yeah. Apart from that, I don't see there's any other places. Even in the 9th canto...
Well, that's something. I mean, he did hear Bhagavatam in the womb.
And also, there's another description of Prabhupada quotes also the Brahma Vaivarita Purana.
Yes.
In the 9th canto, chapter 21, text 25.
That's probably the same episode that we're describing here. Yeah.
And he says that Krishna, which is also what Jiva Goswami says, that Krishna came...
Yes, and the 12th canto says that too.
Yeah. Krishna came assured him that he'll be free from illusion.
But there it doesn't talk about hearing Bhagavatam.
No, it doesn't mention it. This is the only place where I found.
Okay.
thank you. I could find.
And thank you. Last comment from Vishnukant? No, okay.
But the question is, our conception is that he left the womb, and when he left the womb, did he had some attachment for Krishna, but was not fully matured, or that leads to a whole discussion, because we understand him that he became self-realized.
Before I can give an opinion on that, I have to straighten out what actually happened in the womb. What did he hear? What happened to him in the womb? Did he hear Bhagavatam or not? I don't know. So I can't answer that until we figure that out.
And when he came out, he was not a fully mature devotee.
I don't know yet.
He studied the whole Bhagavatam.
I don't know. Yeah. I have to sort out the information first. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you, all glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.